Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Today comes to us from the Gospel of John, chapter 6, verses 35 and 41 through 51. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Then the Jews began to complain about him because he said, "I am the bread that came down from heaven." They were saying, "Is not this Jesus the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? Can he now say, 'I have come down from heaven?'" Jesus answered them, "Do not complain amongst yourselves. No one can come to me unless drawn by the Father who sent me, and I will raise that person up on the last day. It is written in the prophets, 'And they shall be taught by God.' Everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. Not that anyone has seen the Father except the one who is from God. He has seen the Father. Very truly I tell you, whoever believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats of this bread will live forever, and the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh."
I think that I just decided we have to do a Winter Olympic series. We got two more years, I can wait, I guess. That just came to me. It's our last week. I'm going to miss that so much of our Olympic Faith series. And today we're going to focus on memories, Olympic memories. And to do that, to start us out, I'm going to immediately take us back a bit, about 20 years. And I want to say there's one curse word in this video. And we can't edit it out because Matt's on vacation. That's just life. And the word is ASS, in referring one man basketball player to another man basketball player. So I'm just warning us. I couldn't get rid of it. And we don't have bleeping powder. So I'm taking us back 20 years. Does anyone remember the dream team for the Olympics? Yes. So just to refresh our memories and give us some of the faces and definitely the attitude, let's look at this trailer, which is for a movie about the dream team.
The greatest team ever put together.
It was groundbreaking, certainly.
It's pretty amazing.
It is hard to imagine it's been 20 years. In my mind, I was hoping and thinking they would not ask me to participate.
It was a no-brainer for me. You know, I was in from day one.
Then I looked at it and said, wow, you know, how often do you get the chance to play against and play with these guys?
You can't get too close to mine with five.
I was in heaven from the moment I stepped on the floor with those guys.
They called them the big guns.
I didn't feel like that I deserved to be there. I truly wasn't going to tell them that.
If we lose, it's going to be like the biggest upset in sports history.
Chuck did an outstanding job. As a coach, he's in a no-win situation. If you win, you're not going to get any credit. If you lose, all the wrath is going to fall right on top of your head.
They brought in these college kids, and they came in and kicked our butts.
I think that right there woke us up.
I didn't select anybody, okay? So if you wasn't chosen, shut the hell up.
I don't think we wanted to be on the team if he was on the team. We're enemies.
That first couple days of practice, the tone was set that, hey, these practices are gonna be wars.
Don't be cheating on me.
Kyle Malone jumps up like this. Barkley just dunked on him so hard. It was just an unbelievable play.
That practice was better than the games.
Michael Jordan called fired out and went at him. Tell him, this is what I'm going to do to you. Fall away jumper. Good. What did I tell you?
You're in there with the best. You better bring your game right now.
So then
I came down.
You know I had to get mine in.
Charles, how you like that ass kicking we gave you?
Oh, no. Come on now.
Once we got to Barcelona, it was a full-blown spectacle.
People perceived us as being superheroes.
I had to enjoy the Olympic experience.
This team affected people in such a way that I've never seen ever.
What we did would go down in history as one of the biggest things that ever, ever happened and won't ever be duplicated.
I figured eventually there'd be a movie made about the Dream Team.
There were two words in there, sorry. That tells me I don't hear things so well. There they were. There they are. Do you know why this team was put together, generally speaking? It wasn't just for fun. The U.S., always dominant in basketball, we were sending our best NCAA players, but they were starting to lose. And the U.S. was not going to have any of that. Because what was happening was that in the world, the level of basketball was rising, the level of play. And so in the 88 Olympics, they decided no more losing. We're going to put the Dream Team together. And so 1992 marked really the first time that we sent our NBA players to the Olympics. With the rise of basketball worldwide, it kind of shows us how the places that we as a country hold dear and hold strong in our own sports are not limited to our borders. How our community ends up going beyond our shores and our boundaries. And the Dream Team was a way to, I think, in my own opinion, express our own dominance again, but also for us to feel good, to feel strong, and to take our place in the world. And as they said, it's possible that they, at that time, created one of the greatest moments and memories of Olympic history. Kind of depends if you're a basketball fan or a soccer fan, which that's not my greatest memory. Brandy takes her shirt off. That's my favorite memory. That's right. They were coached by Chuck Daly. You saw him just for a moment in there. And as he said, they were greeted like rock stars. But when they were asked about that, Chris Mullin said, I don't really know about that part. I didn't really think I was part, or I was a rock star. I felt like I was part of a whole band. It was a group experience for me. And we were made up of the greats. Now, I'm going to go through this just briefly because not all of us know basketball. That team had on it Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and then irrepressible, unpredictable Charles Barkley for Spice, I think, as well as seven more NBA All-Stars. David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Karl Malone, Scottie Pippen, I said Chris Mullin, Clyde Drexler. There was a point guard named John Stockton, and to complete the roster, I think I can say his name right, Christian Laettner. And he was the only one who was not NBA. He ended up being NBA. He was the best college player of 91-92, and they put him on the squad. Charles Barkley was quoted as saying, hey, we put five Hall of Famers in there, and then we added five Hall of Famers to our bench. There was no place for anyone to go. They were an unforgettable team. They did create memories for millions of people. Not only for people who watched it, but the players that were with them on the court, apparently, were playing the game and trying to pose next to Michael Jordan with their friends out in the stands saying, like, take a picture now. There's lots of stories like that and pictures published of other Olympic athletes trying to get a picture of themselves on the court. Memories are really interesting like that. See, they really have the power to influence us. They also have power to comfort us. They also have power to wound us, but to inspire us too. And like this, the Dream Team, that is a communal memory, but also part of why we showed the video is it's individual memory for each one of those players. And if you watch the movie or watch any of the highlights that they're starting to show right now, it is very interesting to hear people say, and I'll say a little more about that later, those guys, their own individual memories as well. Memories are so important to us that if we're a person who loses our memory, we know this about some people who move into Alzheimer's or dementia. When we lose our memory, then we lose our place in community often. Not because we're excluded, but we don't remember who we are or who the people around us are. On the other hand, memories can also be held onto so tightly that they paralyze us. They hold us in place. There's a great line in a play called The Cocktail Party by T.S. Eliot, where an unidentified guest is saying to the star of the play, kind of named Edward, he says, "Don't strangle each other with knotted memories." Memories can prevent us from, like, seeing a person how they are today. You know, imagine if Rosemarie, I was only willing to see her as I first met her 3 years ago. You know, we don't want to be knotted in our memories, but so many times we are, and we are prevented from moving forward. And when we do that, it's kind of sad. But memories are also, at the same time, really strong. They can enlighten us. The memory of something like what we just saw can educate us, can inform us, can help to inspire us to do great things. And why is that? I think it's because with memory comes meaning. And meaning is what so many of us are longing to find. We're seeking meaning in our lives. So often, I can't tell you, this happens to me, and if you've done this to me, don't worry, I just don't want to hurt your feelings. But people will come up to me whose kids are grown and out of the house, because mine aren't, and they'll say, "Oh, you are going to remember these years as the best years of your life." You know you all have said that to me, and I'm going to say in my head, I'm going to say, "Thank you." And inside I'm going, "Really? 5 loads of laundry every day, 5 days a week, picking up socks wherever they are dropped? Really? Best days of my life? Making food, preparing it to be put in sacks every day for how many years? Really, the best days?" Oh. To me these days, as much as I love my babies, all of whom are in this room right now, nicely dressed. Susan ironed one shirt. See, we need help. They're days of physical, hard labor. Same as when I had two of them 10 months apart. These will be the best days of your life. Really? I haven't slept one night for 18 months. Really? Then I did say things more meanly because I really hadn't slept for 18 months uninterrupted. It's funny. Why do people say these are the best years of my life? Because we've attached memory and meaning together. A bride will remember her wedding day as the best day of her life. So will a groom very often. As the pastor, I'll say it's one of the most anxious days of your life. Really, we attach meaning to when something begins. It's very, very true that meaning is hard to find. And so when we talk in our kitchen tables each week, many of us, that's part of what we're trying to do, is talk about our memory of the week, how we've done good and done no harm if we can, or where we have done harm, and how we seek to stay in love with God, and then we try to attach meaning to that. What will you take with you from this week, often we ask. And what will you take with you, I'm going to ask you now, but not to answer out loud, from these last weeks of the Olympics? Just kind of hold that as I'm talking. What are your own memories? Because that's what we were talking about in Kitchen Table. And this week, one of the answers was, I'm going to take with me all those losses that I witnessed. And one other person, I'm going to take with me the accidents that I saw. Another person, I really hold on to some of the victories and the facial expressions that I saw. And another person talked about sportsmanship that they witnessed. Sportsmanship was really what that person is going to remember. All of the times I witnessed someone doing something unexpected for a teammate of their own or of another team. Those moments mean so much to me, that person said. Why? Why does that hold meaning for us? Of memory and meaning, H. Richard Niebuhr wrote this many years ago. He said, because our Christian community remembers the revelatory moment in our own history, it is required to regard all events, all of them, as the working of God who reveals God's self. And so to trace the ways of God in human lives, we must look back. It is necessary for the Christian community living in faith to look upon all the events of our time and try to find in them the working of God's mind and God's will. Another way to say this might be, we grow in faith when we look back over our memories and we're able to identify and witness God's activity in our own lives and in the lives of our community. So I'm thinking that this is what Jesus is doing, according to the writer of John's Gospel, in that passage that Susan just read for us. Looking back in history and trying to address with these people in front of him God's activity throughout their life. Maybe you didn't notice how memory was laced through that passage. So I'm going to give us a little bit of a close-up view. I'm not going to go through it all because I think you'll get the picture. But right from the start, Jesus said to those folks, I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Well, that might be nice words for us to hear in 2012, but the hearers of the word of that day would have a close memory of the Israelites wandering around in the wilderness following Moses and God providing for their hunger, God providing for their thirst through gifts of manna, bread, and water. We can't be certain, but maybe remembering this when they're listening to Jesus or listening to this story read from John's Gospel, maybe it would jog them into thinking something like, there was a time when God cared for us. There will be maybe more times such as that. Maybe it would give them hope. They would also have in their memory, as I said, if they were thirsty, there was that time in the Bible where Moses takes a rock and a stick and hits a rock. Water. What do you want when you're thirsty in the desert? Water. When miracles happen and we're reminded of the ways in which God acts decisively when we believe all is lost, we might think, that could happen again. That memory might give us hope. Well, right after that, the hearers of this, identified in this passage as the Jews, begin to complain. And they grumble. That word that we read as complain really is rendered as grumble. And it's carefully chosen by the writer of John because of memory. Because the hearers would immediately remember all those grumbling people following Moses. They complained and complained and complained, and he uses the exact same word. The exact same word. Is this because the writer wants the folks to quit their complaining, maybe? I think so. How dare they complain when they've just lived these generations being brought by God through a desert? Now they have lives set up and they're still complaining. I'm going to move on just a little more. They go on and they say, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say, I've come down from heaven? I love that. That's short-term memory. That's short-term memory. That's Joseph and Mary's boy. He's not all that. He's no better than anybody else I raised and sent to college. Who is he to tell me? Besides, he's too young. They have short-term memory right away. And Jesus puts it right back on them. So you see, memory is laced through every one of these verses. And when we want to think in those terms, what I'm hoping is that we can think about it too. How do we engage someone else when we want to help them? Or we want to tell our story? Or we want to influence them? Can we find memories from our own experience with them or in the world and share that story in a way and then attach ourselves? So what does that really mean, all that I just said? How do you actually do that? Well, let's go back to the dream team for just a minute. There was a time, as I said, that we excelled in basketball. Before we had to send the NBA guys in to the Olympics, we were really the best. And we were getting to a point where we were not anywhere near the best. So our memory was being brought forward. If the story had ended there, the USA dominated, they stayed with their strategy, they always send college players, why should they ever change that? We would be being beaten all the time by now. But we didn't. Instead, we made a decision that the deficit of basketball talent would end. And so we called in the best. As Charles Barkley said, the creme de la creme. You can hear him. And we proved, beyond a shadow of doubt, who really was the best. And if the story ended there, even, in 1992, how sad would that be? But it hasn't ended, because today, 20 years later, we remember again the dream team. So we started with remembering how we were dominant, then we put the dream team in, then we had that life. Now we go back not to how we were dominant, but see, we don't go back as far. And we remember how once we were lost, and then we won, right? And we live in that winning. Can that happen again? And that's where we are today. And that's when the wondering begins. Because can there be another dream team? See, that's what's open for debate. And of course, Michael Jordan says no. But Shaquille O'Neal says maybe. Right? Because he's here today. Michael Jordan was then, right? Because if there can never be another dream team, we're stuck. And we're knotted and strangled in our memories. Because of all the thinking and all the possibility and all the inspiration that can come from wondering, ultimately that's where belief comes from. Is the holding of memory, the sharing of memory, the wondering about the future, and then the intentional steps after that. Let's go back just one more moment to the scripture. Jesus comes around at the end to memory when he speaks of the prophets. He says, "It was written in the prophets that they shall all be taught by God." Those prophets in some way might be his way of lifting up to memory people who stand up and say hard things to recalcitrant, grumbling groups of people, present company accepted. It's not an easy thing to move past memory into hope. W.H. Auden said it this way: when you try and move past memory into hope, there is a war. And the war goes on between those two groups of people. He calls them the Arcadians and the Utopians. The Arcadians are those who want memory to stay, so we live in our ideal past. And the Utopians are those whose imagination constructs an ideal future. And I'm not certain, but it seems that these folks who are doubting and questioning have recreated an ideal past for themselves, the grumblers. They've forgotten the death and the hard work it took to get through the desert. They've forgotten all that. They've forgotten the 5 piles of laundry. And they're saying, that was the best, that was the best, that was the best. Right now, today, there's a young woman, 17 years old. Maybe you've heard of her. Her name's Missy Franklin. She won a few medals at the Olympics. And here's what she said of her winning moments. "It is impossible to describe. It's absolutely incredible. I was at the finish and I was thinking, they don't understand how everything was actually preparing them for this moment." All the laundry for this moment. In one other interview with Piers Morgan, she said, "Just knowing that everything I have done has been worth it. Every early morning wake-up call, every time I jumped in the water at 5 a.m., every time I was freezing, every experience you ever have gone through leads you to the moment. I saw a video of my parents. They were hugging and crying, knowing that I also did it not just for me, but for them and for everything they have helped me do." She's clearly already in memory and attaching meaning just so soon after her win. Because you see, every one of our memories prepares us for every moment of our lives. There's a hymn that says, "For the living of these days." So whether it's looking back at the memories of how we've been hurt by the church, how we've been hurt by religion, that prepares us to be here today. Whether it's looking back at the ways in which the community that we have been in has not lived up to its potential, that prepares us for today. Whether it's looking back at the best church we ever, ever were part of and we had to leave it so that we could stay employed, and we're in grief, that has prepared us for today. Whether it's looking back at no church at all and thinking, "I want to go somewhere," that has prepared us for this day. For that's how today we have a hope and a prayer of appreciating what God is doing now. One more visit to the dream team and a few quotes. And I use these because these men really were great basketball players. And the reason we call it a dream team is you would never expect all of them. It's what you sit around and say, you know, what if all of these, fill in the blank, were on one team, which could never happen, but it did. But even, as I told you, within that communal memory, those men have their own memories. Larry Bird said, "When I was a young kid, I used to watch the Olympics with my dad. I couldn't believe I was doing what he dreamed about." Charles Barkley said, when you hear the national anthem, you or I had chills all over my body, as though he wouldn't, right? It was the best feeling in the world. Michael Jordan said, that was the best basketball team you are ever going to see, ever. It's the best basketball team I ever played on. And Magic Johnson, he finishes it with this. Well, there is only one dream team. There is no other dream team. Those other teams did not put on a show like the dream team. They were not loved like the dream team. They did not have the personality of the dream team. They did not play like us. That was the greatest basketball I've ever been personally involved in, ever. The practices were way better than the games. So what will we be poised for? What are we on the edges of our seats for today? What memories hold you in this place? What have you carried with you for years that will propel you forward? And what memories might you need to really just let go of? And I ask you to think about that and hold that as we begin to get ready to come to God's table. Because at the table is where we go back in memory every time to that event where Jesus invited his friends to share a meal. So just like we've been saying, we hold a memory. We hear the story that Susan and I will share in just a moment. It's the story out of Christian memory. But then here we are today, invited again to make a new choice to see how God is working in our lives and in the lives of our community.
Pass me not, O gentle Savior.